In vacation, a goon or two will escort you, a White House invitation. Dogs for pets, abusive sex, enhanced interrogation. It isn't torture if there isn't bodily cessation. La 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 la. Dick Cheney, he had a brew or three, and then went hunting quail. He shot instead a lawyer's head, why isn't he in jail? Obama, he and McCain agree to take Iraqi oil. Blackwater, they mercenary way to occupy their soil. La 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 la. McClellan says it was the prez who was Valerie outing. Who cares as long as spending on the war is still amounting? Condi, she state secretary, says that we are winning. Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, she says it's just beginning. La 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 la. Both sides of Congress got their stock in military spending. It doesn't matter if our schools and bridges need amending. Our children need not...
Good afternoon. This is the WILP Radio Show. WILP being the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We're here every Wednesday from 5 to 6. And we call our show the Wake Up Call. And what we try to do on this show is connect the dots, because we see all of the issues that we're concerned about as connected, particularly when we're now living with endless war. We see how that impacts every phase of our society. And we have a guest today that we've not had on before. John Jacoby, did I pronounce it right, John?
Yes.
Yeah, welcome to our show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we met John, what is it, a month or a couple of months ago, when there was a climate change support protest locally here at the Peace and Justice Plaza, and one of the people who got up to speak was John. And I was impressed with what he had to say, supporting wild nature. And to me, that evoked one of my favorite people, Thomas Berry. And so we were intrigued and asked John to come and be on the show. And he's written maybe more, but he's got a paper on the technology problem. So, John, you want to tell us, what is the technology problem?
So the technology problem is a pamphlet that I wrote in order to explain the basic tension between human freedom and wildness and dignity and the technological system under which we live right now. Our civilization has been developing more and more technological solutions to our technological problems, and this has only produced more technological problems. And as a result, there's more and more complexity, which requires more and more control. And as and the result of this is a net loss of freedom, and we end up living undignified lives that are controlled by robots and technocrats and the elite. If only we can end this system, which is going to end eventually. But if only we can work towards the end of this system, we might have a chance of. Living a life after it that is dignified, that is free, that's living closer to wild nature, the way that we've lived for thousands and thousands of years.
Wow. So you know, part of what you're saying, we were talking about other writers have talked about we're heading towards collapse, and I don't think that is a new idea, although some people may be in total denial about that. But I think since climate change particularly has so dominated the news, which it should have been dominating for a long time, but there was so much denial. But I think more and more there is not only acceptance among most scientists, but as we look at all the fires and floods and more violent storms, I think that even those who didn't want to believe in it, it's right there in your face and getting very scary. But I'm not sure how many people equate that with technology, because I think still many people, and I think in your paper you say even for yourself, there's some things we kind of rely or would be hard to give up with technology. Maybe you can talk some more about that.
Yeah, it's hard to see the connection between the problems that we're facing and technology if we're living in the first world, because we are living in a world that's highly abstracted from the actual industrial base. So we might say we have great industrial medicine, and industrial medicine is a great thing, but the people who are working in the factories and getting cancer from the pollution, the people who are living in places where companies are poisoning their water aren't saying that that industrial technology has brought them great medicine. What they're saying is that it's brought them great sickness, it's brought them death, mm-hmm. it's destroyed their ways of life. Mm-hmm. Right now we're seeing these resources running out, and finally for the first time these rich people who depend on these resources for their control are having to bring in these industrial bases to first world nations. We can see this happening with fracking, because gas is running out. Now we need because oil is running out. Now we need natural gas. And so for some of the first times, the first world is having to see once again the industrial base that really their way of life requires. And they're responding, I think, in an appropriate way.
That's an interesting take on that. I never thought about it that way. You know, we've been fighting fracking and what it's going to do to our water and our air, but I didn't think of it in terms of it's really coming to the first world, the industrial effects. And I was just hearing somewhere about some town, and I forget where it was. I wish I had written it down, where the whole town is going to be affected by the fracking and where they put the liquid afterwards, and they're trying to fight it, and they don't have a whole lot of a chance for it. You know, it's when you get big money in the and I forget what state it's in. It's not in this state, but it'll be happening in this state if things go on the way they are. So, yeah, I guess we've had like the oil wells in Texas. All of it's been kind of far from at least some of us. And we had manufacturing here, but less and less of it. And in fact, we keep saying, oh, we got to get manufacturing back. But I remember pictures of this big steel mills and how hard that was on the people who worked in it. And of course, I come from a family of, on my mother's side from Canada, of coal miners. But I guess that would still be in discrete places, you know, where fracking can contaminate such a wide area, because water and air don't stay right within a certain narrow space. They tend to migrate.
Exactly. See, the first world has not always been separated from its industrial base. Whenever the railroads were being made, whenever the coal mines were a big thing, people had to face these consequences. But also we see at that time a lot more resistance. And there was a lot more resistance because these things were in people's faces. For a period of time, we've been able to live not having to see the dirty work that goes into making our life really comfortable and cushy. That time has passed. That time is going to be falling apart very soon. It's in the process of falling apart right now.
Yeah.
And as a result, we're going to see some huge ruptures over the next few decades, and especially with climate change. Climate change is a big thing, and it will leave spaces for communities to resist, but it could also, if we're not properly prepared, it could completely destroy these places and these communities. It could also take a lot of lives. It's already taken a lot of lives. Mm-hmm. So it's important now for people to build values that are contrary to this industrial system, for them to prepare for the world that they're going to be entering into. They need to grieve what they've lost, and they need to celebrate what they haven't lost. There is, inside each one of us, there is still wildness, there is still freedom, and there is still a way of life that is dignified. Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to formulate ways that we can live, social relations that are going to be appropriate for these new circumstances that the world is entering into. And I would argue that if we have the chance, we should end the system that is currently making those healthy social relationships, those free and dignified social relationships, absolutely impossible. Mm-hmm. And the time is going to come whenever climate change or peak oil or antibiotic resistance or one of these disasters that are pushing on industrial society really break it apart and mm-hmm. make it much weaker.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's coming so fast upon us, and things are changing so fast. For example, just driving over here, they were talking about the stock market showing some instability and the stock market being kind of nervous. And they were talking, one of the things making it nervous was that the oil prices are going down. And how that's going to, you know, a lot of these things unequally affect different parts, you know, so this, the oil-producing countries, but of course we're an oil-producing country, and so some states will be unequally affected. And part of why oil is going down is because of the increase of the use of natural gas. Mm-hmm. And I thought, God, is this all happening so fast? You know, fracking's been going, you're laughing, going on in Pennsylvania to a horrific degree, and some other states. But we've been scared about it here, and we've been fighting it, but the moratorium is still not taken away. We still have some protection, and although it's fraying, and it's going to probably happen very, very quickly. But I had not realized that so many industrial uses and everything, that they're using natural gas instead of oil.
Mm-hmm. And even our food is dependent on oil. Industrial agriculture is only possible because of oil. We're basically eating oil.
Yeah.
So whenever land becomes not arable anymore because of overuse and overfarming, which has happened a long time ago, we had to use manure and fertilizer that is full of oil. And this is why you hear sometimes about fertilizer being regulated, because people can make bombs or whatever. They can make bombs because there's oil in it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so this is like what happened during, I think, the 60s or 70s, I can't remember exactly, is a period called the Green Revolution happened. And this is whenever agriculture radically changed. And what happened was the technological system that our society is like based on, the industrial system, was finally reaching this point of no returns, this point of where it overextended its energy and didn't get any of that enough of that energy back. But because of the innovation of the Green Revolution, it was able to extend its lifetime for a little bit longer. But we're seeing now that lifetime is probably about to reach its end again. Mm-hmm. So the thing is we have to be careful whenever we're talking about specific issues, and we have to always take it back to the overall problem, which is our technological society. Because if it's just an issue, that issue, we can be tempted to try to put a lot of energy into fixing that issue and innovating it. But all that will do is make the society last a little bit longer so that it can kill more people, poison more water, destroy more of the wild. So, for example, with climate change, this is a big issue, and it's a serious issue, but it's one caused by industrial society. It's not an energy issue. It's not like these politicians are trying to make it, which we should be suspicious about, because these are people who are helping cause the problem. And what they're proposing are things like geoengineering. And geoengineering is a pathetic attempt by scientists and politicians to try to fix the problems that they've created. And the problem with geoengineering, which is messing with the weather in order to be able to control it to an extent, is that once you start, you can't go back. If temperature is rising, and in this one area you're keeping it a cool temperature, then as soon as that technology goes away, then the biosphere will have radically different conditions really, really fast, and life won't have time to adapt to it. So we'll all die.
So I think, Dick, I just want to ask you: is the sound coming? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it good? Maybe you could explain, because I've heard some of that on the radio, some of these wild ideas of geoengineering. Maybe can you give us a description of one of their wild ideas that could disrupt the whole system? And they say, oh, it's a little risky, but you know, it could do so much good. Maybe you could. Do you remember? Can you tell us what one of the technological fixes they were talking about in geoengineering?
A big one, probably the one that they're actually already using in some areas, is they're just injecting chemicals into the air or injecting small little particles that reflect light back up. And
they're already using that?
Well, Obama actually recently released a statement saying that geoengineering, like, they're going to move forward with geoengineering because climate change is too big of a problem. And what they're doing is they're putting it in. This sounds a little bit like the chemtrail conspiracy, but it's different. It's not the same thing. We're saying two different things, but they're using commercial airliners and government airliners in order to put these chemicals into the air. They don't leave chemtrails, like, you don't see them, but that's what kind of makes it scary, is we don't really even know that it's going on, and this was very quiet. But if you look it up on the internet, Obama geoengineering climate change, you'll be able to find the report very quickly.
Wow. Okay, well, I heard a report about it, I guess on NPR some months ago, and they had two or three wild schemes, and I thought, oh, gosh, you know, I hope it doesn't come to that, or they better not do that, because you're right. I mean, you start messing around, it's always these unintended consequences.
Exactly.
And we have suffered through so many of them in so many ways. So another disappointment with Obama, huh?
Yes.
We'll put that down as disappointment number, 10 or something?
Well, the thing is we can't expect change to come from above, because mm-hmm. they're part of the larger machine. So even if one yeah. little gear tries to go the opposite way, the larger gears of the entire system are going to push it in the so-called right direction, which is why we can't rely on moratoriums for fracking. We can't rely on moratoriums for geoengineering. We have to unite as a social body and fight back. We have mm-hmm. to do what needs to be done to preserve our lives and the lives of our friends and our family and our community, because we're not part of this larger machine. We're being used by it, so we have an opportunity to throw a wrench into it.
Yeah, I was looking at your pamphlet, and it says, you say, consider the problems we have already faced in just the past decade. Antibiotic resistance, which mm-hmm. has been kind of a new thing in the last, quickly spreading diseases due to transportation systems, and now we're in the beginning of this huge Ebola.
Ebola, exactly.
That is terrifying.
And it'll only keep happening.
Mass surveillance, which we've, thanks to Edward Snowden and some other brave investigative journalists and whistleblowers, we were hearing bits of it earlier on during Bush, but now we're hearing, you know, the whole enchilada, which is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change, we're now getting to recognize as a society. Mass extinctions, and there's more and more coming out. There was a New Yorker reporter, Elizabeth Colbert, who's written a book on the sixth extinction, and this is what Thomas Berry, who we've talked about on this program before, has said for decades, we're in the beginning of the sixth extinction. And I don't think people still understand the what that really means.
Mm-hmm.
for all of us, invasive species and so on. So you really put it right out there. And when you put it together like that, you know, you're right. You take one thing, oh, we can fix that. Mm-hmm. Or you take this other thing, oh, we can fix that. Or the other thing. But just like we say with WILF, you know, that there's connections. And these connections are so important that it's no one thing in isolation from the rest, that each thing influences the other.
Right.
And makes a powerful indictment in your pamphlet. And then you say that these problems will continue as scientists, governments, and corporations push for even more invasive and destabilizing technologies. And then you say sometimes some scientists are even considering utterly insane ideas like geoengineering. And I thought it was insane, too, except, you know, for some of these scientists who want to make a lot of money or get their names. And now you're saying the president is maybe signing on for that. So so things are progressing faster and in more ways than I think we've realized. And that the general public realizes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like Paul Revere, like the British are coming. You know, really, your pamphlet and Thomas Berry, and there are, you mentioned Lewis Mumford, who is from another century. There's people who've been like voices crying in the wilderness, you know. The prophets, you know, be careful. This is going to happen unless you change your ways.
Yeah, and the thing is that I'm not just saying we ought to change something I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I think we can look at history and we can look at the things that are happening right now and we can formulate a general idea of what we actually do need to do.
Mm-hmm.
There have been movements before like Earth First, which have sounded the alarm and then unfortunately fell apart because of some internal strife. There's been Edward Abbey and Dave Foreman. There have been people have fought this fight before. It won't take a whole lot. It'll only take like a quick instance for everybody to be impassioned to fight again.
Well, what's really okay. We have 3 minutes till we take a station break, and then we make some announcements, and then you can catch your breath, and we'll come back to you. What's really interesting, I read this article some years ago, I think probably in the New Yorker, that until after the Second World War, we really had a much less technological life. Yes, there was mining, which has gone on for eons. There was manufacturing, but we didn't have the plastics industry, and agriculture was still much more sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Still much more on smaller farms, using a lot of mules was still in this country, using natural fertilizer. And it wasn't, which really surprised me, it wasn't until after the Second World War that we really started gearing up all this massive technological changes.
Right.
And so people lived pretty comfortable lives. You know, we did have electricity. The way things are going, if we have a collapse, we may not have that, but we did have electricity. We weren't in the dark ages. But it was much more sustainable for the planet as a whole.
Yes.
And then after the Second World War, they with the whole plastics industry, and then with what fertilizer came out of, what were they trying to use up some of the chemicals from the Second World War? I'm not quite sure.
I don't know.
I don't know either, but it wouldn't surprise me. I think that some of like Roundup and stuff has come from Agent Orange. I think Monsanto, they don't want to waste these chemicals. So, you notice when you go camping, people love to go camping.
Mm-hmm.
And you may think, oh, I don't want to live like that all the time. But, you know, you can be pretty comfortable.
Exactly. And fulfilled.
And
you have a purposeful life.
Yeah, and have a purposeful life, yeah. So you're seeing that we need to be preparing, and I think some other people have been saying that too, that we are headed for collapse, and that I know there was a whole big thing, I think, in Carrboro maybe 4 or 5 years ago on transition communities. That was some book, and around mm-hmm. the world some communities are saying, how can we teach ourselves old skills, you know, like canning and more sustainable ways of growing our yeah. food, or organic food. How can we learn how to knit again? Do all these skills that people use for centuries that help them survive, and that and I think there is a somewhat of a renaissance in that, but we have a long ways to go, don't we?
We do.
Yeah. So we'll take a break now, and we have a couple of announcements. And, John, we want to come back to you. This is a fascinating pamphlet. We ought to get it mass-produced. And you can, I don't know, some stuff underlined that you may want to touch on in the second part.
Okay.
So, Dick, you want to start off with your announcement?
Well, I'll do the standard station break.
Oh, for you. We've got to do our station break first.
Yeah. This is Dick Paddock, co-host of the Wake Up Call for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Triangle Branch, which has a website at triangle.wilpf.org. And you can go to the website and keep up somewhat with what's going on. It's kind of hard to keep track. Things are moving so quickly these days.
That's right.
And we are being brought to you over the facilities of WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. And the website for WCOM is wcomfm.org. And you can stream onto your computer the shows that are on the air if you go to the website. Would prefer and are close enough, you can get to our FM station signal at 103.5 FM. And we are underwritten, supported by Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street.
The big news is?
Big news is that they're in the heart of downtown Carrboro. On Lloyd Street.
John, and do you know the number, Lloyd?
1001.
Thank you. We got to get that
1001, wow.
Yeah. But right as you go from Main Street, it's about the second building from the corner on the left. It's very close, and there is parking.
Yes.
Much better parking than downtown.
I have a couple of announcements that I want to make. Actually, three. First one is that News and Views, the show, the weekly show of North Carolina Policy Watch with Chris Fitzsimon, follows us directly at 6 o'clock. So stay tuned for
that.
Stay
tuned when we say goodbye.
Right.
Keep your radio on.
The second thing is that I am a member of the Southern Anti-Racism Network, and we are going to make our second conversation on race and reparations. One will be thinking and working most directly with the criminal justice or criminal injustice system mm-hmm. that it can fairly be called, I
and
think.
That's hot in the news now since
yes.
Ferguson. And like Moral Monday, they didn't just have a protest and then people say, I protest and go home. It's ongoing.
It's ongoing even steadily.
Yeah. Steadily.
Practically every night, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, they just had a special 4-day one, but people from all over are getting involved. There's community conversations. We've had them here with both police departments about the militarization of the police. So this has become a national topic, and well, it needed to be. And so this is going to be a conversation when?
It's on the 23rd of October, which is a week from tomorrow. It will be at the Haiti Cultural Center, St. Joseph's Baptist Church in Durham. It's on Old Fayetteville Street. It's a cultural icon in Durham. And it will be moderated by Artemisia Stanbury, who's an associate professor of political science at North Carolina Central University. Also participating will be Larry Hall, who's
great.
Who's an attorney and is the Democratic leader in the North Carolina House of Representatives. We're very fortunate to have
That's
him.
That's wonderful.
And we'll also have Sandy Velez, who is a SARN member and is involved in prison ministries in the Apex area.
Okay.
And she's going to participate as well.
Great.
And we will
well,
have refreshments.
Time?
It's from 6 to 8, and we will have refreshments. And so.
In last time, they were darn good.
Thank you.
And a great turnout. I mean, I'm really impressed with Durham. We had over 100 people. You had over 100 people. It was very heartening.
Yeah. And so we look forward to having a good-sized crowd and getting down into the nitty-gritty. We will be continuing the series on later on in other topic areas such as environmental justice, which includes the housing issue. And our other interest areas like education and trying to get a handle on getting education right.
And Wolf has been working on that here locally really hard through the NAACP's Education Committee. And, in fact, I'm going to – some of us from Wolf are going tomorrow to meet with some members of the school administration. So we've been – you know, you have to just keep working on these things. You know, you can't just do one quick fix, unfortunately. It's ongoing.
It's a long haul effort. We have to play. Have to be ready to play the long game.
You do have to.
Yeah, and one more thing, and that is about the radio station. WCOM Community Radio is having a 10th anniversary celebration fundraiser. It's going to be Thursday, November 6th, from 5 to 10 p.m. at the Hickory Tavern in the Hampton Inn, which is right behind me, as I said, here at the console. It's 370 East Main Street in Carrboro. Join WCOM hosts and listeners for a celebratory evening recognizing the 10th anniversary of your community radio station. That emphasis on your, because we're an all-volunteer group, and that means we all come from the community. 10% of all food sales will go to WCOM as long as you, when you leave, take your receipt from the cash register and put it in the basket, and we get 10%.
Don't forget that part of it. Don't eat a lot of food and forget the receipt, or we're not going to make the money that we hope to make to keep this wonderful radio station going.
Yeah, so that's Thursday, November 6th.
Proud to be part of.
That would be 3 weeks from tomorrow. 2 days after Election Day. Don't forget to vote.
For goodness sake, don't forget that.
From 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. At the Hickory Tavern.
Okay, and I just want to make a quick announcement also. We'll really focus on this next week, but mark your calendar because people get so busy these days. On Sunday, October 26th, AIM, which is Abrahamic Initiative on the Middle East, AIME, AIM. And its co-sponsors and partners invite faith leaders, human rights activists, and concerned individuals to a public forum about the Palestine-Israel situation. And it's called The Quest for a Just Peace, Linking Liberation Struggles. And so they're going to have Jewish, Palestinian, African-American, and Latino speakers. And so that is going to be Sunday the 26th, 2:30 to 5:30 at the FedEx Global Education Center at UNC on 301 Pittsburgh Street. So please, this is such a wounding thing for the whole world, this oppression. This is the empire, you know, which we're talking about with John, empire and, you know, the powerful oppressing the ones who are less powerful. And we're talking, I'm Lori Hoyt, by the way, and that was Dick Paddock. I don't know if I ever at the beginning said our names, but we this is the WILP program, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And we're talking with John Jacoby, who has written a fascinating pamphlet on the technology problem. You know, so often we think of technology as such a good thing, and John is trying to disabuse us of that mythic hope, you know, that we've relied on, and it's biting us back. It's one of these unintended consequences things, you know. It's just, you know, you look at the automobile, and then who would have thought of all the problems that has caused? You look at so many things, and the Green Revolution, which was supposed to be the big hope for humankind, and now they have the biotechnology with Monsanto, and not even, and they're saying, well, we need that to feed the world. And the thing is, right now, there's more food than is needed to feed the world. The problem is not insufficient food. It's poverty. The problem is poverty. How much tons of food is wasted? Probably in our own community. You could just look at the university. I mean, the schools, all of us. There's so much food that's wasted, but it does not get into the right hands. And part of that is that there is, what, 1 in 4 children in Orange County has insufficient food. So while we're throwing away tons of food, there's food, but people don't have the money to purchase the food. So before we talk about technological fixes, what we got to talk about is the issue of poverty. But John would say it's even more systemic than that. So let's go back to you, John, and talk about, we've outlining some of the problems, and so what are some ideas you talk about as getting more conscious? What are some ways we can help people do that, or what shall we do?
So you spoke earlier about transition communities, which I think are a great idea. I think it's a good idea for people to learn skills that they're going to need whenever we don't have these technological infrastructures to rely on. But I think people should be willing to do more than just change their personal lifestyle. They should be willing to fight. They should be willing to work with the community to fight. Now, I'm not proposing that people go out and do random individual acts of violence.
Good.
But I do think that there are going to be like some nasty situations, and that we need to be willing to face up to those and do what it takes in order to get where we need to be. Whenever there's confrontations in the streets, if we need to hold that street and the cops are trying to get us out, if that requires like pushing back, then that's what that requires. And this doesn't have to come from a place of anger, and it doesn't have to come from like this murderous, gross, nasty place. All it has to come from is a place of compassion. Some Earth First protesters once were trying to occupy a forest that was going to be torn down for a mine. Maybe it was for fracking. I think a force that was going to be leveled, and then a fracking operation was going to be held there. And one of the native protesters came out, and these people were fighting the police because the police were trying to evict them from the forest. And I think that they were justified in doing this. And what really struck home is that the native protester came out and he said, whenever my children ask me who fought for our water, I'll say that I did. Whenever your children ask who fought for your water, you can tell them that I did. This is coming from a place of compassion. Mm-hmm. Violence does not always have to be an angry, despicable, gross thing. Violence is sometimes a necessary act of compassion and an act of self-defense.
Okay. So, you know, you're talking about resistance, but talking that sometimes in that act of resisting, it can, without the intention being violence, it can become violent. Is that what? That as you're resisting fracking, well being put in a neighborhood is, mm-hmm. you know, I remember pictures with mountaintop removal,
right,
of people resisting and chaining themselves to the bulldozers and stuff so that they couldn't move forward. But you're saying in that regard, if as they want to maybe forcibly remove them, others would resist more forcibly, then I guess I'm not quite comfortable, but I understand what you're saying, because it isn't there, I don't think, yet, but maybe that's my own denial. But you're saying it's inevitable that it will get to that place.
If we want to get where we want to be, if we're going to get to a world that is free and non-industrial, we're going to have to be willing to fight the hard fight, because the other side is going to be willing to fight the hard fight, and they're not going to care what your response to them is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
The government has shot people who've resisted. They've killed and destroyed communities. They do not have any mercy. The government, the politicians, and the technocrats have no mercy. And we're not going to be able to walk with this naive view that we're going to only be able to sit nonviolently and not be tear gassed and not be killed and not have our water poisoned regardless of what we do. And again, I don't think that people should go out and do random individual acts of violence. I think that if violence is to be undertaken, it should be something that everybody's willing to do at that point, which is why I don't think that's what we ought to do now.
Yeah.
I think what we ought to do now is...
Okay. I'm getting more comfortable with it. Okay, let's put off. Okay, so now what? Like education, educating ourselves?
Well, there's a few things we can do. We ought to build... values in our society. We ought to invalidate these technological values that of profit and efficiency and artificiality, these technological fixes to our problems, and we ought to instead encourage simplicity, freedom, things like values like privacy. Wildness is the central one. We ought to...
I think I don't mean to interrupt you, but I guess that really struck a chord for me when you, in that talk where we first heard you, mm-hmm. at Peace and Justice Plaza with the climate change protests, where you talked about wildness. Now, with all these talks that go on, that was the first time I heard somebody talk about wildness, and that just really hit my soul, you know, because of my immersion in Thomas Berry's thinking. And I really love that you brought that value into the political discussion, you know, because too often it does get into political analysis, and that was really a spiritual and soul
right
value that you injected into that.
And is that not what this is really about? This
yes.
isn't about our spirituality.
It
the
is.
Earth has lost its magic. No longer can we think about these magical creatures that live on the other side of the world. Everything has been made banal. Everything has been made gray. And people who have these creative urges to make this place more colorful, to make this place a more creative and free place, are sent to prison. They're killed. They're living lives of poverty. They're just maladapted to this industrial way of life. Recently, the Paperham Puppet intervention
yeah.
came, and their whole theme was about there was wild nature, and then the gray came, and there's these eyes that are watching over everything. And at one point, this graffiti artist rabbit comes out and paints on the gray, and then he gets sent to jail, and the whole audience boos, like the children are booing because the graffiti artist rabbit is being sent to jail. And then everybody's at the end, the graffiti artist rabbit gets like... there's like a little prison break thing, and everybody's cheering, and this is our freedom that we want. This mm-hmm. is our freedom. There's no reason for creativity to be destroyed. There's no reason for relationships and love and wildness to be destroyed. Yeah. And so we really just need to fight back against the system. But the way that we need to do this first, the way that we have to do this is forming groups of people who are really dedicated, who really want to get to that end, and they're starting to learn what it means to live according to these values rather than the values of industrial society.
Well, and also like with the paper hand puppets and other creative people reminding us, you know, and when you think about the education for those children, that can be built on by their parents in school. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a great believer in the hopes of, as people understand, they will coalesce more to resist these ravages. I mean, but a lot of times we don't know quite how to do it. You're right. I mean, how many people are grieving about the elephants? Where these people are killing thousands of elephants for their tusks, you know, and leaving these mutilated, great, magnificent creatures. How many other, the tigers, the lions, you know, and it's...
I read an interesting statistic.
Yeah, okay.
Just within the last 2 days about the elephants. And the fact is that... the people who steal the tusks, kill the elephant for the tusks, it's worth the number I saw was $21,000. If you leave the elephant alive and let it be a tourist attraction, it's worth over $1 million. So, you know, it's just making the wrong choices.
Well, and I think some of it is like they use some of this for certain medicine, I think China or something, like potency medicines. But whatever, I think that the sex extinction, and we can really notice these big, magnificent creatures, but there's all kinds of little birds and
right.
critters and all kinds of things that, as Thomas Berry would say, all of these were in nature that helped us get to where we are as human beings, and everyone is necessary, and you start removing this one and that one or the other one, and there's going to be a collapse of things that we're not, it's unintended consequences
right.
that we're not even aware of, that each one is intrinsic and important to this whole web of life and supporting us. So, yeah, I love that you brought up that about the paper hand puppets. So poets and artists have been trying to keep the wild alive for us, but you're right, when they get too often, then they offend people or they get marginalized, if not
right.
imprisoned, yeah.
But this is poets and artists and thinkers and writers. These are the people who are integral to what ought to be done right now.
Yes.
Because before every massive paradigm shift, there are always people who Eric Koffer calls men of words. They're women too, but he calls them men of words.
A little behind the time, even though he's a futurist, right?
Right.
A little gender behind the time.
And Eric Koffer was writing about, for example, in the before the Russian Revolution, there were thinkers who were invalidating the values of that society, which left a lot of room for the Bolsheviks to come in and overthrow that society. Now, this is, I'm not advocating the Bolsheviks. I don't like them at all, actually. But we can learn how this process of radical change happens. So what we ought to do right now is thinkers and poets and creative works people invalidating these values. And you can do it right now. You don't have to be this famous thing, famous artist. You can be the graffiti artist rabbit. Mm-hmm. You can be the student who writes a pamphlet that's not really well known. All that matters is that you reach out. That it's more than just a personal change. It's a social change.
Yes, and that's what Wolf totally supports, this idea. You know that. You can't just do little individual things and, oh, I'm going to get a Prius so then everything's going to be okay. Mm. Or, you know, or I'm going to do the recycling. All of that is good, but it's not going to make societal changes. That we've got to work together. I guess we've tried for so long to hope that the political change would and I think many of us are getting disheartened with how effective that is, although not ready to give up on it, but it certainly needs more than that.
So this is actually another aspect that I think ought to be said. These communities are not just going to be these communities are going to involve more than just learning skills. They're going to also involve a good deal of grieving because we've lost a lot, and we're not going to get it back. The Paul Kingsnorth in the UK started an interesting project called Dark Mountain, and he created a group. It's a network of thinkers and poets and artists who are trying to figure out these stories that can take the place of the stories that we've been telling ourselves as a civilization and that have been destroying this earth. And in the process of telling these new stories, they're going through this process of grieving. This is their way. This is their catharsis. I think that's the word.
Yeah.
This is their way of releasing all of this emotional trauma that's come from living in a world that just is utterly disrespectful of life and wildness. So these communities ought to grieve, but they also ought to be hopeful because we aren't going to change things purely through legal means.
No.
This doesn't mean illegal things either, although I do think that there's a place for those. I just think there are social changes that ought to happen that are neither legal nor illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the pivotal parts. These are more important than either the legal or illegal tactics. And this social change is what ought to be really pushed for. But this social change is going to be very, very small until an external thing happens that's outside of human control. Mm-hmm. Some sort of disaster, whether it be Ebola, some other disease, climate change, whatever, that weakens industrial society enough that everybody's like, wow, we're really going down the wrong path.
Yeah.
And then at that point, there's an opening.
Yeah.
And if people are prepared for that point, we can push those social values. And if we're not just pushing social values, but we're also pushing resistance, then people will fight at that point. And it only takes it's always a very short window whenever things explode.
So you want to be prepared. You know, one of the hopeful ways that people look at it historically was the response in Cuba. When the Russians had to leave precipitously because of the collapse of their empire, and so the Cubans had been totally dependent on them for the oil to keep this technological society at that time going, and so what happened is they had to start growing food without fertilizer based on oil. So they started all these gardens in the city, in the, you know, just all over the place. They had to grow their food. And that now they had a strong government. And in that case, it was probably good in that everybody was assured so many calories. So nobody was malnourished, but everybody lost a certain amount of weight because the food was fairly distributed because there was a shortage of food.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wonderful video showing how they adapted, and you're right, out of this desperation. And they did it in a fair way instead of some people starving and some people having their gated and shooting them if they wanted some food. Instead, it was a socialist government. It was a dictatorship to a certain extent, but that was very, very positive in that regard, in that nobody starved.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was in the same boat, and they all pulled together and survived. And so that that has been seen as a model of what I think you're talking about, that with if people are aware of that, of course, we don't have a strong government, so I think we may have a lot more chaos, but it is possible, you know, for us to pull together and not have some people starving while others are the gluttons and the pigs.
Right. I think though it's important that people are prepared to for the worst.
Yes.
Because the worst is actually a really big possibility at this
point.
It
is. You're absolutely right.
People might end up dying. In fact, people will end up dying. And it won't be any fault of the people who are fighting against industrial society. It will be the fault of the people who repeatedly, time and time again, fought for a stronger industrial society that made more people dependent on it, knowing that at one point it was going to collapse. Mm-hmm. People at this point, scientists and politicians and technologists who are fighting for this crazy so-called progress right now, should be held responsible because they know that there are going to be consequences to their actions. It happened with the Industrial Revolution when everybody was supposed to become rich and live well, and then the Green Revolution when everybody was supposed to be fed. But that's not what ended up happening.
No.
So now whenever we're talking about GMOs or like the internet connecting everybody, what are the unintended consequences? We can already see some of them happening, but what are the ones that we don't even know yet? And how is that going to affect people?
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, whenever there are ecological limits that we have to face and this whole thing collapses, those people are going to be the ones who are responsible to a large degree for, not totally responsible, but responsible enough for continuing to build this system rather than trying to fight for life and fight for freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I in that way, I'm skeptical of a government being a way for change to happen, since it's so much a part of the machine. I do think that governments will exist after the collapse, though, which is, you know, that's not my fight.
Well, you know, what's really interesting that this country with a democratic government was able to mobilize in the Second World War incredibly quickly, and everybody sacrificed. I remember my daddy was a little too old to go fight, so working in the post office, you know, three kids and in his 40s. But the meat was rationed, so when they would get meat in the store, you know, he would be late getting home because they'd stand on these long lines. So everything, you know, you're too young to know, but you had stamps for meat, stamps for shoes. You could allow just so many shoes. Sugar, butter, that's when margarine came into being. So everybody sacrificed, the country pulled together. They churned out this huge war machine. They were putting, I don't know how many ships a month or a week and planes galore, and they could do it. But if, I don't know if there's that political will to do it for peace, to do it for pulling together when we're going to, I'm sure, have some major catastrophe with the climate or whatever's happening.
Or Ebola.
Or Ebola or something like that. Can we do it for peaceful, loving, compassionate values and not for the war machine? It would be an interesting thing for us to all pay attention to. John, we only have a couple of minutes. Is there some way that people can get in touch with you?
Yes, we have our website at uncfc.org. And we also have links on that website to our Facebook and email.
Say it again. UC?
UNC. FC.
FC?
Yes. .org.
Okay.
And we publish a biannual journal. And the first issue of our journal, the theme of that is hope. And we would love people to submit things to this journal.
So it hasn't come out yet, but you're getting, you're preparing it.
We are. We're accepting submissions.
And the theme is going to be what
again? Hope? Hope.
That's one. So that is good. That is good. It's so nice to have a young person and get some new ideas, not totally new, but certain a new cast, certainly taking them to a stronger degree than some of what we talk about. And I'd love to get some extra copies of this and hand them out.
Okay.
So sometime maybe you could call me or whatever. I can go over to the Internationalist and pick up some. Or if you – actually, I guess you probably don't have a whole lot of money. We could – I've marked this one up. Maybe just get me a fresh copy and we'll make some copies.
That sounds great.
Yeah, I'm sure you're watching your pennies. And Dick, we never got your poem, but next week we'll definitely make time for it to be closer to the night. Do we have time for one stanza?
No, we've got 10 seconds left. Just to remind you that this is WCOM LP